podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
May you live in interesting times is an English expression presumably translated from a traditional Chinese saying. This expression certainly describes today's environment for clinical research and regulatory science professionals in Europe who are currently dealing with clinical and regulatory issues ranging from implementing the new medical device and in vitro diagnostic regulations to the EU's new clinical trial data transparency framework. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA Global Forum. Ms. Karen Roy is Senior Vice President, Client Solutions for Flix Global, a provider of electronic trial master files, TMFs. She has extensive clinical and electronic data capture experience and co-chairs the DIA TMF reference model, an industry-driven initiative to standardize the content, naming, and structure of trial master files. Ms. Roy also serves on the program committee of DIA's first Clinical and Regulatory Operational Excellence Forum in Europe, and she joins me today to discuss the current and future states of clinical and regulatory operations in Europe. Thank you for joining me today, Ms. Roy, and welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
What is the DIA TMF reference model and what benefits has it provided to clinical and regulatory science professionals?
The DIA TMF reference model came out of the EDM special interest group at DIA, and it was really an initiative to try and standardize the content for the trial master file. And what we found was that every company had a different TMF structure, a different set of contents. And we brought together a group of industry professionals to create this standardized structure. There are 11 zones, there are a number of sections, there are 245 artifacts, and it really goes across the entire TMF. And what's really important about this is that the TMF historically was seen as something that was owned by clinical. The CRAs, the project managers owned the TMF, and nobody else really thought that they really had a lot to do with the TMF. And what the reference model has done is it's brought that whole spectrum of documentation together. So we have data management, statistics, regulatory, and it's brought all the groups together to see how important the TMF is and how much of a focus it needs to be. And you asked about the benefits. I mean, I think the benefits are now being seen that we have maybe 700 people on the reference model group. It's being adopted by any company that is implementing a new eTMF is almost guaranteed to adopt the reference model. The group is well recognized by both CROs and sponsors. So that's important because the CRO sponsor interface is something that's really critical to get right. And what this does is it helps standardization between the two different groups.
In your observation and experience, has this reference model led to organizational changes across the pharma industry, across the CRO industry, or in the interface between them?
Absolutely. The biggest change is that it's brought all the groups together and it's made TMF not clinical, but really across the entire clinical trial landscape. It's also, I mean, as you know, the regulators have been very focused on trial master files. There's a huge focus from an inspection perspective. And with the critical finding announcement that the MHRA came out with a couple of years, 2-3 years ago, it's made everyone very, very acutely aware of the challenges of the TMF. And I think the reference model has really helped people manage those changes and has brought efficiencies. If you imagine an inspector goes to one company or the next, and the TMF structure is the same, they know that 111 is the TMF plan. They know that 211 is the investigator brochure. That's the sort of thing that's made standardization and somebody buys, you know, and mergers, acquisitions. I do think it's changed the face of TMF.
Have departments been reorganized inside pharma or inside CRO to deal with this new model?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's all TMF reference model, although, as I said, since I've been involved from the very beginning, I like to give it credit for everything. But I do think that the way TMF has been handled organizationally within companies has changed tremendously. You know, 5-6 years ago, there were very few companies that had dedicated TMF groups. It was much more just something that happened at the end of the study. And the whole focus now has shifted to the TMF being an active driver of workflows within a clinical trial, of efficiencies, you know, the inspectors expecting the documents to be there at all times. And just tying it back to the, I know we're going to talk about the Operational Excellence Conference, but one of the important sessions that we're going to be doing is about how a TMF can actually help you in terms of driving your clinical trial and how it can work for you rather than just being some sort of somewhere where you put some paper at the end of the day.
Organizationally speaking, do companies create TMF departments, or is the TMF functions sort of shared across several departments, not just clinical, as you mentioned, but across other departments? Which organization model do you see most frequently?
I think I see more of the TMF organizations coming out and standing alone, especially in the bigger companies. The smaller companies tend to have, you know, one or two people that are responsible for the TMF, and very often they're in clinical, sometimes regulatory, occasionally quality, often records management. But in the bigger organizations, there's a whole department specifically focused on that. And often what they have is a TMF department, and then they have functional representatives. So they will have TMF SMEs in data management, stats, regulatory. So somebody from that group who is responsible for the TMF, sort of almost as feeding into the main TMF group.
And the sizes of these TMF departments are in the range of what, 2 people, 200 people, 2,000 people? What have you observed?
So that really depends on the model. Obviously, with a lot of work being outsourced from sponsors to CROs, a lot of the times, a lot of the work is outsourced, in which case the CROs might be running studies and doing the TMF management, in which case there's a big department of the CROs. Equally, what could happen, though, is a sponsor could outsource maybe the sort of scanning, indexing, processing of it to a specific company, in which case their own TMF organization might be very small, might be, you know, 2, 3, 5, 10 people. On the other hand, they may decide to keep that sort of operational processing within their own organization, and then they could have a TMF organization of, you know, 50, 60 people who are doing scanning, indexing, QC of this TMF on an ongoing basis.
Let me move to a much more general question and related to the DIA upcoming conference on clinical and regulatory operational excellence in Europe. What are some of the trends you've seen in clinical research in Europe during the past 2 years?
One of the things that I've seen really driving huge change is generally just technology. People are looking at technology integrations. And I know that, you know, one of the big topics is sort of big data and how you're going to get data to move from one thing to another. But I think a lot of people are looking to drive efficiencies through using technology, having data transfers from one place to the other, whether it's the CROs transferring data to the sponsors, whether it's within an organization. And I think that's changed a lot. If you look at the roles within organizations, the CRA role is changing. Risk-based monitoring is, you know, I know it's not taken over, but it's definitely something that is raising itself. And with the latest ICH and comments about taking risk-based approach, I think risk-based monitoring will increase again. And again, that's a topic that we're covering in the conference, because I think it's something that people are very, very interested in. Well, what does it actually mean? If I do risk-based monitoring, how do I manage it? How do I get the data flow? And so I think we've seen a lot of that change happening over Europe. The other change that, of course, is just in a regulatory change. So the inspectors, specifically on TMF, becoming a lot more focused, all the critical finding discussions that have been happening, et cetera, but also striving towards, you know, common regulatory applications and it sort of standardizing again across Europe as well. So probably the main things that I've seen is how people work together, technology driving that.
In your crystal ball, do you see artificial intelligence intersecting with clinical research?
Absolutely. I think that there's some things that we do that are absolutely perfectly positioned for artificial intelligence. And there may even be some discussion of artificial intelligence at the Operational Excellence Conference as well, where you can pull data from something and use it cleverly to suggest how people might do something or how they might interface with something or what data they might like to put into something or where they might like to file something, I think is something that's absolutely going to come along. I mean, the technology in the world generally is advancing so much. I think this is definitely going to change clinical research. Although I will say one thing, we are very conservative as an industry. And obviously there's always concerns about things like data protection and data integrity, and whatever we do with artificial intelligence has got to be within the bounds of data protection and data integrity guidelines.
Has the emergence of big data made an impact on your work, or are we still transitioning from big data in concept to big data in practice?
Oh, I think big data has a long way to go. I think it's a nice word that people like talking about. There's a lot of data that we just don't do anything with, and I think we can definitely take advantage of it. I think lots of people are looking at different ways of databasing information and being able to present it back and being able to use it in useful ways, average times to be able to get approvals in certain places or this, that, and the other, and trends across the data. But I personally think it's still very much in the concept stage. I think there's a long way to go with big data.
How long away is that? Is it 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
The rate of change that you see in the world, I would have said it should be 3. With the pharmaceutical industry, it's probably going to be more likely 5 to 7 years. I remember when EDC first came in and everybody said, EDC is going to change the world. And it literally took about 7 years before people were actually really using it properly. And they sort of just talked about it for a long time. I think, as you said, I think we're a conservative industry.
It feels, though, like the pace of change has accelerated just in the last 3 to 5 years.
I would agree. I would agree. And so maybe 3 years from now, things will be very, very different. I'm an eternal optimist rather than a pessimist. So I would always think it's going to be quicker than it is.
All right. We'll hold you
to 3 years.
Fair enough.
I'll give you a very, very good example. The electronic investigator site file. I truly believe that that is the way we will be going. At the moment, we are still giving our investigators piles of paper. We're giving them access to ETMFs, but we're still giving them all their regulatory binders or site files. And no matter how much you try and talk people into not doing that, they still do it. It's just slower than sometimes than it would be in sort of an ideal world.
So you see that happening sooner rather than later?
Well, I'm hoping. I really do. I think it is an absolute answer. It's the same documents. The TMF sits at the investigator site, sits at the sponsor site. It's the same documents. We should be able to manage these things cleverly.
So maybe this could be discussed at the upcoming DIA conference on operational excellence. Speaking of which, I wanted to ask you, which trends and corresponding potential solutions do you plan to highlight at that conference?
This conference is going to be really different. So the DIA conferences have traditionally been sit down and listen to somebody talk. This is not going to be like that at all. These are going to be workshops. We're bringing together people who really have great knowledge and understanding of these different challenges. And we're all going to be coming together and we're going to be working together to say, okay, how can we improve the situation? How can we take a problem and solve it? Also, it's split into the clinical arm and the regulatory arm. So if we take like the clinical arm, I talked about the TMF, we're going to think about things like, okay, how do you make the TMF work for you? How do you make it into something that's going to give you metrics, that's going to give you data, that's going to give you trends, etc.? Talking about things like archiving, you know, how do you take something right the way through to an archive and what do you need to do to be able to support that? Looking at risk-based monitoring and saying, okay, so what do you want to do in the risk-based monitoring space that's going to sort of break down the silos between all the clinical R&D arms and actually go across the entire organization? Data transparency, and then that's the clinical side. And then obviously on the regulatory side, there's a whole host of stuff around regulatory intelligence and around submissions, etc., that is the sort of much more the regulatory arm. But people, what will be nice is there's going to be lots of sessions where people can come together afterwards and listen to the across the two tracks. But as I said, the most important thing about this conference is it's going to be a workshop. People are not just going to sit and listen. They're actually going to take part and contribute.
What will be the output of these workshops? Anything formal or just the act of being there and as participants in workshops? Would that be the maximum value coming out of this conference?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, actually. As the steering committee, we haven't talked a lot about the outputs, but you raise a good point. I think it would be really nice to have a sort of a summary position out of each workshop, and maybe we'll get the workshop leaders to actually do that so that we could then provide everybody not just with, you know, there'll be some slides that people might use, but they'll be very high level slides because it's mostly about conversation. And I think it would be a really good idea to have a summary, sort of a summary statement after every one of the workshops
for you to consider.
Absolutely.
Finally, and I do want to ask you this question, has to do with Brexit. Is it too early to determine the impact of Brexit on clinical or regulatory operations in Europe, or have you already seen some impact?
My focus is very much around sort of the TMF and the document side of things. And I'm always aware of the impact. So, you know, the fact that the EMA will move out of London, I think, is going to have a significant change, effectively meaning the MHRA are more of a standalone organization. The impact could be huge in terms of the regulatory database for centralized applications. You know, if the UK is not in that regulatory database, then people will have to come and do a totally separate application to get trials up and running in the UK. That could effectively reduce the number of trials. It could have all sorts of impacts. From a documentation perspective, you know, you'll be needing to be think about, well, you've got the centralized application and then you've got these standalone UK documents. Whether the rules around the EMA will still absolutely apply to the MHRA and how that entire body will work is yet to be seen. But I do think there's going to be quite an impact on clinical research, least of which is the movement of the EMA out of London.
You mentioned the expectation that the number of trials would be reduced. Do you mean the number of trials in the UK specifically?
I mean, I'm not looking into a golden ball and saying yes, but there is a possibility that someone says it's too much hard work to apply to Europe and then to go to the UK as well. Why don't we just go to Europe and just go to all the European countries? One application, we're approved in all European countries. We have to go through a whole separate application for the UK.
How might that impact the use of medicines and registration of medicines in the UK if fewer clinical trials are going to be conducted in the UK potentially?
I am not a regulatory expert at all, but from what I've seen working, I used to work at a CRO, and where exactly the studies were done seemed to diminish in importance over time. It didn't, whereas originally people seemed to want to always have the UK involved, always have certain big markets involved. Seem to be less, again, this is pure speculation on my behalf, but it's the impact it could have. The reality is it could have a negative impact.
Well, we'll all be watching this space for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
That brings us to the close of our conversation. And thank you very much for your time today, Ms. Roy. Really appreciate it. And thank you for your insights.
It's a pleasure.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.